Manchester. I'm Rick Gantley, NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Sarah Ashworth in for Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Most students around the state are on summer break, out of the classroom, away from their textbooks, and away from school oversight. And most are probably enjoying it. And during the school year, that's also how students might feel when they're suspended or expelled. And that's part of the problem, say some child advocates. Being suspended isn't always an effective punishment. Yet across the country, out-of-school suspensions are on the rise. Rates have more than doubled over the past three decades across all grade levels. And at the same time, racial gaps have widened. Black students are 3.5 times more likely to be suspended or expelled than their white peers. Here in New Hampshire, 4 years ago, the Carsey Institute looked into just how effective expulsions and suspensions are and whether too many students get them. Researchers found our schools have an out-of-school suspension rate that's higher than the national rate, and small schools with high percentages of low-income students have the highest rates. But for many cash-strapped schools with few resources, sometimes suspending a student is the quickest and most effective tool. Today on The Exchange, we look into school suspensions and expulsions, their long-term impacts, and some possible alternatives. And we want to hear from you. Do you think suspensions and expulsions are the best way to discipline a student? Are there more effective alternatives? Or does keeping a bad student in school take away from other students and their classroom experiences? The number to call in is 1-800-892-6477 or 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also email us at exchange@nhpr.org. And joining me in studio this morning are Ted Comstock. He's Executive Director and General Counsel for the New Hampshire School Boards Association. Good morning.
Thank you.
And Ellen Feinberg. She's Executive Director of the Children's Alliance of New Hampshire. Good morning.
Hello.
And welcome. So, Ted, I want to start with you, and let's get a sense of what gets you suspended from school in New Hampshire and what gets you expelled.
It's a very complicated and controversial area, and I'm going to try to be brief because the legalities run deep here. And the reason they do is because it's the intersection of a lot of rights and a lot of different kinds of laws, starting with constitutional law, federal and state statutes, federal statutes, administrative regulations, school board policies, employee handbooks. So in order to really have a good feel for what goes on in the student discipline area, one has to be familiar with all those legal sources. So I just say that as a beginning statement because there's a lot here, mm-hmm. and there are a lot of rights that are involved here. But state statute provides that students can be suspended between sort of 0 and 9 days for a variety of reasons that kind of fall into the gross misconduct category. And there are rights that they have during that time to know why they were suspended. But then the next level of suspension would be the long-term suspension, and that's 10 days or more. And at that point, the students have due process rights under state statute and DOE regulations to confront their accusers, if you will.
So they get a hearing?
They get a hearing. To determine whether, in fact, the suspension is appropriate, whether the punishment is appropriate, whether the remedies involved are appropriate. And you might say the capital punishment of mm-hmm. student discipline is expulsion. And that's for a certain set period of time. It can be for a year. It can be for a shorter period of time. It can be permanently in very odd cases. But you can imagine, like capital punishment, the due process rights there are very intricate. So the school board has to demonstrate, you know, beyond a reasonable doubt, really, that the appropriate punishment for the act is expulsion from the school setting, because that obviously would permanently deprive a student of his or her right to a public education.
And so, as I understand it, one of the key things that might get you expelled is if you bring a weapon to school. That's pretty much a zero tolerance. You're expelled.
That pretty much is a zero tolerance. I say pretty much. That's a function of federal and state law. Mm-hmm. The law that I was just referencing is combined with the firearms issues, but expanded beyond that to gross misconduct. But certainly gross misconduct would include bringing a firearm to school. The reason I say that it's not zero tolerance is that zero tolerance policies typically do not allow any discretion or flexibility. They're applied regardless of what the circumstances may be. Punishment is meted out, and that's it.
So there's some variance among school boards, school districts, schools around the state.
Well, there's a variation, I think, more in the implementation than in the adoption of policies.
Okay.
The policies are created to address all of the different sources of law I mentioned to begin with. So the policies would look quite similar, but the implementation of those policies by superintendents, by principals, by teachers could vary some just because of local differences.
Sure. So, Ellen Feinberg, you are Executive Director of the Children's Alliance of New Hampshire. What is your interest in school suspensions?
The Children's Alliance looks at what issues, policies, and practices will make life better for children of our state. And we became interested in suspensions and expulsions because there was such a high number. We found this out, we started looking at it, and we realized that perhaps there was room to examine our practices and policies as a state and to look at where the issues were and are and how we could help to bring people together to have a conversation around what changes could be made.
So you do feel that too many students are being suspended or expelled in New Hampshire schools?
The facts from a research brief that we commissioned from the Carsey Institute at the University of New Hampshire says that, yes, we have a higher rate of school suspensions and expulsions in New Hampshire than the national average, and that we especially have a higher rate for schools, as you mentioned in your introduction, for low and moderate income students. And that's worrisome. We need to be looking at why that's the case and what other opportunities schools have to discipline students. And I know that schools are doing a lot. Please don't hear this as a criticism of what schools are doing. But as Ted mentioned, that in the 1990s, the idea of zero tolerance policies, many of which were put into place then as kind of the feedback or the aftershock from all of the
Columbine or
yeah,
some different
exactly.
events.
Exactly. Yeah. And so a lot of schools and school systems and states said, okay, we're going to go into lockdown mode here. And so what was once much more discretionary became then a set of rules that became in some cases inflexible. So that's one of the things I believe that's happened. And so we need to get back and look at those now and see how things, our world has changed because, of course, schools are different than they were in the 1990s.
So today on The Exchange, we are talking about the rates of suspensions and expulsions in New Hampshire schools. We hope you'll join the conversation. And if you work at a school, if you're a teacher who has expelled a student or a school administrator, we'd love to hear from you as well. The number to call is 1-800-892-6477 or email exchange@nhpr.org. Ted Comstock, Ellen was just talking about this sense of zero tolerance that began in the last couple of decades. Is that something that working with school boards and schools across the state you felt?
I think that we have a range, we have a spectrum from, you know, zero tolerance kind of policies which have allowed no discretion to be exercised at all or very little to policies that perhaps would allow complete discretion. And the real challenge that we all have is to find a disciplinary policy that fits in a community and fits in a school. And my experience is that zero tolerance policies are not those, because we're talking about human behavior, student human behavior. And I think everybody would agree it's very hard to categorize that in one way. One size
bad
does not
good.
Necessarily
right.
fit all. And unfortunately, usually the infractions or the alleged infractions don't neatly fit into the same box all the time. And I think as humans, we can appreciate that, you know, every circumstance tends to be a little different. So we like to provide policies to our members, sample disciplinary policies that do allow their administrators, who are the professionals and the teachers at where the rubber meets the road, to give discretion, to give flexibility, to make judgments. Because it's very easy to look after the fact at whether something that was done in the heat of the moment was right or not. But what we like to do is to provide the flexibility to the degree possible and appropriate to make sure the situation is handled appropriate. And the other thing I'd like to comment on is I know the focus of the program is on suspension and expulsion to a large degree, but there are a lot of lesser forms of discipline that are available to school administrators and teachers that happen much more frequently, and they're much more much less severe.
Are you talking about detentions?
Yeah, talking about detentions, which could last, you know, one period or two periods. Suspensions don't come in the same flavors either. There are out-of-school suspensions, but there are also in-school suspensions where the student is removed for good reason, presumably. But they are still provided some level of services during that time. So I don't think we should lose focus on the fact that there's a whole spectrum of disciplinary procedures that are available to school administrators and teachers. And I think it's designed that way. So, in fact, we don't jump to the most onerous punishment to begin with. Progressive discipline. I think most people have heard of the term progressive discipline. Well, that's really what's practiced in the schools. So we start to look to see what the infraction is, to see if there's a less punitive way to deal with it. And if there is, that's where we start. Now, if it repeats or it is severe enough, then perhaps somewhere further up the spectrum is appropriate.
And so that's what we will keep talking about, and Ellen will come back with you after the break to talk a little bit more about school discipline. Back in a moment.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. NHPR's summer car raffle has begun, and as usual, we're giving away a bunch of prizes, including a new car later this summer. But get your tickets today to put your name in the hat for the early bird prize, $2,000 in Irving Oil Gas gift cards. If you're the winner, your name goes back in the hat for the other prizes, too. But only when you get your raffle tickets at NHPR.org. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Monadnock Music, presenting their opening concert and all Mozart program featuring vocalist Michael Maniacci, Sunday, July 14th, 3 p.m., Peterborough Townhouse, monadnockmusic.org. And from Harbor Women's Health, Seacoast OB-GYN, welcoming Dr. Sonia Nelson and Dr. Jean Ryan to the practice. More information at harborwomenshealth.com. It's 9:20. This is NHPR.
And this is The Exchange. I'm Sarah Ashworth in for Laura Kanoy today. And today on The Exchange, we are talking about school discipline in the Granite State, specifically a lot about suspensions and expulsions. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477 or send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And we are joined in studio by Ted Comstock and Ellen Feinberg. And right before the break, we were talking about this broad spectrum of disciplinary options available to schools. And Ellen, let's go back to you.
So what I was going to say is that in New Hampshire, from the study that was done previously, New Hampshire does have a higher rate of out-of-school suspensions and expulsions. So even though there is a range, as Ted said, it seems that often suspensions are used as a form of discipline, and too often, and especially out-of-school suspensions. So we would like to look at that further and see how that can change. And it's been changing across the country. the Los Angeles school system has just abolished out-of-school suspensions as a regular practice. And the entire school system, the entire city of Los Angeles, now no longer uses those suspensions regularly. And I think one of the questions that the CARSI study brought up that we really need to look at here in our state is the reason that kids get suspended. And there, as we discussed, there's weapons and drugs and violence and the kinds of reasons that you would expect young people to get suspended from school, and rightfully so. But then there's a category on the reporting that's other. And most of the suspensions, including the out-of-school suspensions, are for others. So we really don't know why that tool is being used as a disciplinary practice on a regular basis here in the state. And I think that's a question that we need, or an issue that we need to get to the bottom of, to see if we can make improvements here. Until we have more information, it's really hard to make that assessment and to see how things could change.
So this report that you're talking about was done by the CARSI Institute about 4 years ago, and we actually have on the line now the author of that report. She's Barbara Walkup, and she's director of CARSI Institute's evaluation program, and she's a research associate professor at the University of New Hampshire. And again, she's the author of this 2009 report on student discipline in New Hampshire. Barbara, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
So I wanted to start by we've been talking a little bit around some numbers, and we don't have really the most accurate numbers from, say, this last school year or so. But the study that you did in 2009 looked at numbers from the 2007 to 2008 school year, and that has provided a lot of basis for what we know about discipline in schools. And you found that there were just over 28,000 times when a child was suspended from school in New Hampshire, and 59% of those were out-of-school suspensions. So can you talk a little bit maybe about the reasons for some of those out-of-school suspensions?
As Ellen pointed out, most of what the reasons, the way the data are collected is through something called the School Safety Survey that the Department of Education conducts every year. They ask that all schools in the state supply information on the suspensions and expulsions in the school, and they also ask for the reasons for those. The reasons in the survey that was done that in 2007-2008 that we looked at, the reasons included tobacco, alcohol, use of other drugs, verbal behavior directed at others, teachers and administrators, carrying a firearm or bringing a firearm or other weapons to school, violence against persons, violence against property, and then an other category, as Ellen mentioned. In the last couple of years, they've refined that so that it's down to a smaller number of categories, but they're all the serious categories that I mentioned.
So do we have any idea what that other category might hold? What might be some of the reasons lumped in there?
They really don't have any clear explanation. The when we did the study initially, there was no real clear direction as to what was to include in the other category. And we assumed that it would fall somewhere within the state law, which says it has to be, quote, gross misconduct or neglect or refusal to conform to reasonable rules of school. But you can't determine from the data whether those are minor or major violations. In the last couple of years, the department changed their instructions and the survey itself. So they define these things a little more clearly, and it's clear from looking at the survey that they're asking schools to respond to, that other is other, they define it as other reasons for removal related to drug or alcohol use, violence, or weapons possession. But there's really no way to know if the suspension is being used for lesser offenses since they're not required to report it.
Okay. So in your report, you also break apart and look at schools based on geography, grade level, size, student poverty. Can you start by telling us, where do most of these suspensions or expulsions take place? What part of the state?
Well, if you look at sheer numbers, the largest numbers are in the southern part of the state because that's the largest number where most of the kids are. The enrollments are highest in Hillsborough, Rockingham, and Stratford, and those are the most populous schools. So
that makes sense.
They're going to be, yes, exactly. They're going to be just higher numbers there. But when you look at the rates, which are calculated on the number of students enrolled, at the time that we did this study, the number one county, and we looked at county only, the number one county was Coos, followed by Stratford County and then Belknap County. And because Coos represents the smallest population in the state and enrollment in the state, and Stratford represents one of the highest, we concluded there really wasn't any relationship between enrollment and rate. So it's not clear why there's a difference. We also looked at poverty, and there are schools with higher rates of poverty based on looking at what we call a proxy for poverty rate, which was the number of students eligible for free and reduced lunch. Those were, the rates were higher for schools with high rates of poverty. So we know that schools in the northern and the western parts of the state are tend to have higher rates of poverty overall. So those tend to be ones that also have higher levels of suspensions and expulsions.
I also thought it was interesting you looked at different grade levels, and high schools, probably to no surprise, report the most discipline incidents, but you also found incidents at elementary schools as well?
Yes. It's a small number, small percentage, I should say. It was 7%. And middle and junior high schools were about 21%. There was also a group of schools that are kind of a, don't fall into any of those categories that combine elementary and middle school grades or schools with just fifth and sixth graders. They were 14% of all incidents. And so, yes, the high schools do account for the most.
Okay. And so, Ellen, as you were looking at this report and the Children's Alliance kind of helped put it together, what were some of the key things that stood out to you that are things, hey, we should talk a little bit more about this, we should draw attention to it?
Well, obviously the numbers just in general, and as I said before, the idea that suspensions are overused, it would appear, in our state. But also the idea that there are so many schools with students who are of low and moderate income who, and in those schools, the suspensions seem to be used at a greater, even greater rate than at some other schools. And sometimes what that can tell us is that there are students who bring multiple problems to school and to the classroom, and that schools may not have the resources to deal with those. And so when you're in that kind of setting, and of course, again, we don't have other data to corroborate this, but the assumption is, knowing that poverty is one of the greatest definers of what happens in a child's life and his or her success rate, we know that if that is a presenting issue, that it could really make a difference.
And Ted Comstock?
I think we need to be very careful when we use what are acknowledged to be raw numbers with some analysis to reach conclusions that suspensions are too many proportionally. Maybe that's the case, maybe it's not. But I'm not prepared. I've skimmed the report that's been talked about, and there are some interesting statistics and interesting findings. But based on that alone, I certainly wouldn't be prepared to say to school boards or to people in the education community that suspensions are used too frequently. I just think we need to delve more into that. And the one thing that we haven't really talked about, we focused our conversation on the rights of the students that are subject to discipline. But, of course, there are others that live in the education world as well, right in the classroom.
Other students in the classroom.
And we often receive complaints from parents that students that have been misbehaving in the classroom aren't dealt with in an appropriate way, and they continue to be disruptive, so the story goes. And I know that teachers are very concerned about that too. So that's that kind of balance I was talking about earlier. So I think we need to sort of think about this in a bigger way than just the student that has done something that has caused them to be disciplined.
And I want to get to that in just a moment. And Ellen, you had a thought as well?
Yes, and I think that I know that often teachers and others in schools have been trained to help deal with behavioral issues as they arise. But I also know that given the tight school budgets that we have, often people who have those skills and abilities to work in our schools are sometimes let go, and schools do not have the resources to be able to deal with those students in place. So we have to think about that also.
So let's come back to that thought in a moment. Barbara, I wanted to ask you, Barbara Walkup is still with us from the Carsey Institute, just a couple of more questions. What Ted talked about your data a little bit. What do you think, all in all, what conclusions were you able to draw, do you feel, from the data that you collected, and kind of, and what recommendations do you think point to, can you point to out of this study?
Well, I think to begin with, you have to look at this study as being very limited in scope. We only looked at 1 year of data, and if there's one thing we learned from looking at those data, it's that they vary considerably around the state from school to school, from district to district. And when we did look at the year before, 2006-2007, we realized that it can vary dramatically from year to year, particularly in small schools, where you have a small enrollment, change in just even a few numbers of kids being expelled, for instance, or even suspended, can shoot the rate very high. So looking at 1 year's worth of data is not enough. It clearly, there needs to be work looking at these, tracking these data over time. The one thing we do know from looking at a comparable source of data, which is the U.S. Office of Civil Rights data, which we reported in our report as having showing that New Hampshire actually had a lower rate than the national rate. The reason for that was that they used slightly different data. They also used a sample, whereas we got our data from all the schools that were reporting to the state. But what I would like to point out is that one of our researchers in Carsey is in the process of putting together a paper on student discipline, and he shows that the rates are going up, as you mentioned in the introduction. So even in New Hampshire, using their data, the federal data, New Hampshire's rate has gone up from 2006-2007 from 5.6% up to 6.9% in 2009-2010. So the data, that's just on out-of-school suspensions. So this is a problem that, whereas it may not affect a large huge number of kids in the schools, it's an increasing problem. And so I guess my concern is that it's a problem that seems to be growing, and that the there is not enough data that we have to describe what's going on, particularly at the local levels, at individual schools, to know exactly at what types of circumstances are causing students to be suspended, particularly out-of-school suspensions, and that the system for collecting that data is not as good as it ought to be. And that was the primary recommendation that we made when we wrote this paper 4 years ago.
Well, I want to thank you, Barbara Walkup, for being on the program today. Barbara Walkup is director of the Carsey Institute's Evaluation Program and a research associate professor at the University of New Hampshire. She's also the author of a 2009 report on student discipline in New Hampshire. So, Ted Comstock, I want to go back to this idea that you brought up, that yes, we're seeing, you know, we may be seeing this data that shows suspensions rising, but if we look at what's happening in the classroom and we think about teachers who have large class sizes, limited resources and time, if a student is disrupting class for everyone, is sometimes the best thing to just get that student out of the classroom, out of sight?
I think it depends, and that's why I was concerned about the raw data and if not jumping to conclusions, at least using that to base policy decisions on, because I don't know, and I've been in this business for a very long time, representing local school districts in suspension issues and expulsion issues, amongst others, and I have yet to hear of a teacher or an administrator or a school board that seeks to do anything other than the best for the student. And that's why the lesser forms of discipline are usually used extensively. They wouldn't show up in a study of this sort, but they're used extensively. So getting to your question, judgments have to be made. And I want to get to that category of other, if I could, just briefly, that was talked about earlier, and it was sort of villainized in a way. I think it's good to question it. But again, I think there needs to be flexibility that's captured in a category like other, because you can't possibly list in a policy or in a law every possible infraction that there might be. Now, a lot of times policies or student handbooks will give examples of this other category. But again, I'm not prepared to say that it's abused. I think it's used reasonably. If it's not used reasonably, then there are certainly due process rights that the students have to challenge the implementation of you know, whatever might fall under that category.
All right. And when we come back after the break, we will keep talking about some of the conditions in schools and some of the things that teachers and administrators deal with when we're looking at school discipline. Back in a moment.
This is NHPR 939. Good morning.
On the next Ian Rehm Show, the unfolding events in Egypt. Then, a new novel on an act of mercy during World War II. All coming up on the Ian Rehm Show.
The Ian Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and support also comes to us from the Common Man's Camp Restaurant in Meredith, hosting clam bakes on the patio with all the fixings. Select Wednesdays through August 28th. Schedule and menu at theseaman.com. And Lang McLowry Real Estate, serving the real estate needs of New Englanders from 16 office locations and online at lmsre.com. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
And this is The Exchange. I'm Sarah Ashworth, in for Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on the program, it's the battle over the 10th Amendment and states' rights. You can email us your thoughts or questions at exchange@nhpr.org and join us tomorrow morning live at 9. But today on the program, we are talking about school discipline issues and specifically suspensions and expulsions in classrooms around the state. We're joined in studio by Ted Comstock, Executive Director and General Counsel for the New Hampshire School Boards Association, and Ellen Feinberg. She's Executive Director of the Children's Alliance of New Hampshire. And we've gotten an email in from Matthew in Dover, and he directs this question to you, Ted. He says, why would a school administrator ever opt for out-of-school suspension when they could use the in-school suspension option? What benefit is there to student or school district to remove a student completely from the educational process?
The answer to that question is primarily what the nature of the infraction is. As I mentioned, there is a spectrum of options that are available, and the least punitive is a warning, don't do it again. Maybe, you know, a talk with the parent about the behavior. The out-of-school suspension is used when the disruptive nature, generally speaking, the disruptive nature of the activity is seen as dangerous, unsafe, creating a difficult learning environment for the other students, endangering staff. So those are general sort of criteria, but those are the criteria that a teacher in the first instance and a principal in the second instance and a superintendent sort of at the end of the spectrum would look at in making those calls. And they're extremely hard for us to sort of decide here on a Monday morning as to whether it's appropriate or not. And that's why we entrust the professionals to make those kind of judgments. But generally, it would be something that would be so disruptive that wouldn't neatly fall into a category of, well, let's just remove them to somewhere in the school because that might not address the problem for the others that are affected.
Sure. And Ellen?
I understand what Ted's saying, but I also have to believe that enough of those options have not been tried when we have such a large number of out-of-school suspensions being used regularly. I'm looking at a policy guide for school board members that was issued by the National Association of School Board Members in April 2013 called Addressing the Out-of-School Suspension Crisis. And in that, it says that 3.3 million students were issued out-of-school suspensions in 2009-2010. So this is not only a New Hampshire problem, it's a national problem that's caused this association to look at what could be done on a national level. And it too says that students with disabilities and African American students were more likely to be suspended repeatedly in a given year and recommends that school board members should lead the charge to reduce, if not eliminate, the practice of out-of-school suspensions and instead push comprehensive strategies for preventing the removal of students from school for disciplinary reasons. So it seems to me that there are other practices that are being advocated both on a local, meaning New Hampshire, and a national level, that this has now gotten out of control.
Do you agree with that, Ted?
Not entirely. Obviously, the National School Boards Association is the parent organization of the New Hampshire School Boards Association, and I am familiar with that study. They do indicate that there is a growing issue about that, but I know that they would be the first to support the efforts of local school boards to address this problem through appropriate policies. There are a lot of alternatives to student discipline. We've talked about some of them, and certainly we're supportive of any alternatives with study that would reduce appropriately out-of-school suspensions. I don't think anybody would argue with that. But again, when you look at the complete picture, you've got to weigh the right of the offending student with the rights of the other students and the other staff in the classroom. It's not easy, but that's what makes it so challenging to apply in a given circumstance.
And you can join the conversation at 1-800-892-6477. Let's go to the phone lines now. Seth is calling in from Dover. Seth, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Go ahead with your question.
I am a music education major at Ithaca College in New York, and one thing we discussed frequently is the importance of talking to students and discovering the reasons why poor behavior is a factor. And I was asking the panelists that there seems to be a lot of discussion about what should the punishment be in the event a student does something. I wanted to get their opinions on the importance of discovering why a student does something, not simply poverty or sort of large general reasons, but investigating and helping the student to prevent future infractions in the school system.
Ted Comstock?
And that is exactly what happens under the implementation of most school board policies and student handbooks. I think perhaps we've given the impression that there's just a meat axe approach to all of this, and that's not been my experience. My experience is that there is, particularly for the more onerous punishments like long-term suspensions, there is a frank discussion with the parent and with the student and with the teacher and with all involved to see not only what the behavior was that created the problem, but to see what the root of the problem was, to see if it can be addressed in a positive way. And if you're talking about, you know, the special education student, there are a whole different set of disciplinary rules that apply to them as well. So their level of due process protection is even greater than for the regular ed student.
Thank you for your call, Seth. And we also have an email from Diane in Nashua that echoes that. In a sense, she says, I am a teacher and mentor in Nashua, and I see the same scenario playing out frequently in classrooms. A student who is standing in need of punishment, be it detention or suspension, is a victim of many missed opportunities to be guided and taught the steps they can take to solve their issues and problems. When a teacher looks at student misbehavior as a problem that together the teacher and child can solve, rather than behavior that the teacher needs to punish, a whole new world of new learned appropriate behavior and hope opens up for the child. Ellen Feinberg, I want to go to you. What do you think about what Seth called in talking about? Do we address the behavior enough of students?
I think that that is the kind of approach that these other guides to policy guides for school boards, for schools themselves, could look at if they are established. And I think that that is something that the Children's Alliance is working towards, to bring people, convene those who are interested around a table to have those conversations. How can we look at existing state laws and rules? How can we help on a statewide basis to look at what school boards and school administrators are doing to address student needs in these areas so that suspensions and expulsions are not used on a regular basis or as regular a basis, that they become the exception rather than the rule to this process, in this process.
And Ted, a moment ago you brought up children who are in special ed or have other special needs, and we have an email from Lynn in Merrimack who writes, I'm a parent of an Asperger's ADHD third grader. She was frequently disciplined as a problem child because of her hyperactivity and impulsivity and not understanding the appropriate social cues. These disciplines that included isolation and belittling her in front of other students made matters worse, diminishing her self-esteem and causing even more oppositional behavior, so much so she had thoughts of hurting herself. I now have her enrolled in a PBIS school, and that stands for Positive Behavioral Intervention and Support, which promises not to discipline in the traditional ways that have negative effects on the child. And this gets a little bit at what you're talking about, this wide spectrum of disciplinary options and how each school, each student, each teacher, each classroom is a very different scenario.
Well, in the case of the special education student, once they are identified as such and they have, you know, an IEP and a lot of other protections, then they fall into different categories relative to suspension and expulsion. And so obviously I don't know about the specific circumstance that was the subject of the email, but it is much more difficult for a school district to out of district suspend a special education student. And I think, frankly, appropriately so, because their behavior that resulted in whatever the problem was could be, as they call it in the legal trade in special education, a manifestation of their disability. So there is a whole other realm there of identifying what the disability is in fact the poor behavior of a manifestation of that. And if so, that leads one way, which is not the typical out-of-school suspension, which is more help, more resources, and again, I think appropriately so.
Right, and that comes down to that. As you said, more resources, more guidance counselors, more people in schools who are counselors, in a sense.
I think again, sometimes it's easy to forget that while we all have rights, I'm talking about the general ed population now, while we all have rights to a variety of things, including 4th of July just passed. We all cherish our rights under the Bill of Rights and the First Amendment. But those rights to free speech are not absolute. And the right to attend public school is not absolute either. It is dependent on a certain expected norm of behavior. And that's, I guess, my point today is that with all the rights involved, that we just need to be careful that we're providing due process rights, but we're also not just focusing so much on the problems with suspension that it's seen as something that's not an appropriate tool at the appropriate time. Because sure. I think sometimes it is.
And Ellen Feinberg, do you agree?
Well, I guess that I would say that it's the adults who have created the system in which these students live and in which they work every day. And so it's up to those adults who have a larger sense of justice and who have that have created an environment in which those students hopefully will succeed to work in every way possible to make that happen. And so I would hope that those adults are about preserving those students' rights to that education, because as you well know, if students miss a certain amount of seat time in schools, they have to repeat school. And that sets them back. And eventually this creates a situation in which students are left back. And sometimes those students drop out of school because of that. So it really behooves all of us, because we know how important those high school degrees are. It's been shown over and over again that that's just the basic of what you need to be sure that we're keeping kids in school and helping them to do the best that they can and to be the best kind of students they can. And yes, sometimes those students need to be suspended or expelled, but that should be the exception and not the rule. And so far, it's looked too much like it was used regularly as a rule rather than an exception.
Well, this gets to some of the long-term consequences as well. And quickly, Todd, I have a quick question. If a student is suspended, do most schools count that student as absent?
It depends on the policy involved. Different places handle that differently. It depends on the length of the suspension.
And some students can work on schoolwork while
yes,
they're suspended,
they can.
Some can't. It varies quite a bit.
It does vary. I just respectfully disagree with the idea that the suspension looks like more the rule, because we don't see all of the other things that are done prior to that. And again, I don't think any teacher I know or any principal or superintendent I know says we're going to start with a suspension if there's any other reasonable option available. I just don't think we should be left with that impression at all, because we don't see all the other efforts that are being made in all the things we've talked about to do everything that can be done to keep the student in the classroom. Because very frankly, when you remove the student from the classroom, that provides significant issues for the school district. And most folks don't want to create additional work beyond what they already have to deal with the laws that pertain to more punitive measures for students.
And as we see in some of the data as well, that there are variances in schools in terms of their suspension or expulsion rates. So it does seem that there are some schools who have found ways to make alternatives work. For either of you, what are some of those alternative things that some different schools or teachers or administrators or boards are doing instead of suspending or expelling students? Ted, do you want to start?
Well, I can start by saying that one of the emails already referenced that interventions of one kind or another.
PBIS.
Counseling, more resources applied to these things. But again, not as necessarily a substitute, but as a supplement to the rules of the road. And I think we need to think about this as an entire spectrum of the entire school population. And sometimes we get lost in this is a bad decision, but perhaps it was really a great decision for the majority of the kids in that particular classroom.
Mm-hmm. And Ellen?
So back to that wonderful study that I was quoting from the National School Board Association, they talk about comprehensive approaches that are being taken across the country that we could learn from. For instance, the Minneapolis public schools, schools are required to develop a school-wide behavioral plan, each of them. And in Baltimore, the district has established graduated discipline systems.
Discussion, yep. and school districts around the country are grappling with some of these same issues that we're finding here in New Hampshire.
And what we hope is that we can bring some of the thinking to New Hampshire and help us look at how we can strengthen what we do here.
Well, Ellen Feinberg, I want to thank you. You're Executive Director of the Children's Alliance of New Hampshire. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
And Ted Comstock, he's Executive Director and General Counsel for the New Hampshire School Boards Association. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteers are Priscilla Malcolm and Alan Cohen. Our intern is Tim Camerato. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. And The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Sarah Ashworth in for Laura Canoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
The Exchange is New Hampshire's source for engaging talk, but what we talk about is different every day. We discuss courts, exports, and once in a while, what's new in sports. Solar heating and town meeting, news events, political dissents, and people running for president. The art of conversation is alive on The Exchange. I'm Laura Canoy. Email your comments to theexchange@nhpr.org and join us on the air weekday mornings at 9 here on NHPR.
The Diane Rehm Show, next at 10 here on NHPR. New Hampshire weather, cloudy, showers and thunderstorms likely. Some